Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast, gathering evidence from the literature. We're glad to have you here today. My name is Mike Pratz. I'm joined today by an exceptionally special guest, Dr. Christopher San Miguel, who's faculty here and also undergoing a medical education fellowship. Chris, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for building up the expectations. I really appreciate that.
It's going to be phenomenal. Chris is a world-renowned educator in some ways. So anyways, without further ado, the article we're going to discuss today is titled Comparison of the Accuracy of Emergency Department Performed Point-of-Care Ultrasound in the Diagnosis of Lower Extremity Deep Vein Thrombosis. This is published in Journal of Emergency Medicine, January of 2018. So, Chris, we're talking about DVTs. Why is this an issue? Why are they still studying this?
Well, unfortunately, I think we're still studying it because we don't have any clear answers. DVTs are a potentially dangerous pathology that we see fairly commonly in the emergency department. But unfortunately, it's one of those things that we don't have a great test for 24/7. Even here at our tertiary academic center, we can't obtain overnight ultrasonographer-trained scans to evaluate for DVTs.
It's a real shame.
It is. And in other resource-poor areas, my father practices in rural North Carolina. He can't get scans for, I think, 18 hours a day. Wow. So this is a real problem because as emergency physicians, we like to diagnose emergencies, and we have trouble doing that with this particular pathology. So it would be great if there were a test that we could do at the bedside to definitively say, yes, you have a DVT, or no, you don't have a DVT, and initiate treatment.
Or defer treatment, even.
That's true. Basically, just to make any kind of educated assessment and plan for patient care. The system that we've developed here, and that's pretty common in other places from what I've heard, is to have the patient either return to the emergency department or to the vascular lab in the next day or two to have the study completed. Unfortunately, that system has many inherent potential faults and problems, including losing patients to follow-up, delaying diagnosis, and potentially having patients on unnecessary blood-thinning medications to bridge them to that final diagnosis.
Yeah, I always worry about that, too. The patient where you don't think they have a DVT, but they could, should you anticoagulate them? What if they go home and fall and hit their head and then come back with a head bleed? It's a little bit nerve-wracking sometimes.
But on the other end of it, if you send them out and they have a DVT, and in that 24-hour span, it travels and they have a massive PE, it doesn't look so great.
Or if you send them out anticoagulated and the DVT embolizes anyways, and then they fall from their massive PE hitting their head, they get the best of both worlds. Head bleed plus massive PE.
That's really the conundrum that we see most often here.
So what about this 2 versus 3 point area? What are they getting at there?
So this particular study looked at a 3-point compression protocol. So I believe in the past there's been numerous studies done on point-of-care ultrasounds for DVTs. But the problem is that they're largely heterogeneous in their protocols and also in the training of the individuals taking part of them. So it's kind of difficult to collate all that data. There was a meta-analysis done in 2015 of 16 studies that demonstrated a positive likelihood ratio of 30 and a negative likelihood ratio of 0.04. But like I said, the studies are pretty heterogeneous. One area that it's thought that potentially could bolster the statistics of this point-of-care ultrasound test would be this 3-point area of compression. A lot of studies previously had done 2-point area compression, so it basically examines two parts of the venous system for DVTs. It includes the popliteal and the common femoral artery. But by adding in this 3rd point of compression, looking at the superficial femoral vein as well, you can get a more comprehensive view of the venous system and be more sensitive.
Previously, everyone thought, hey, if we just plop the ultrasound down once in the common femoral, once in the popliteal, we should be good because those are the areas where the DVTs are most likely to develop. Those are the high yield areas. But that's been shown that you miss somewhere between 6 and 7% of DVTs. And a lot of those are in the femoral vein, which is previously referred to as the superficial femoral vein. The idea here, it seems, is that we're going to do a better point of care study and see if we can improve the characteristics of this test in the emergency department. Is that right?
Yeah, that's about sums it up.
So let me walk through how they went through this study. Of note, this took place in Andalusia, Spain, and it was a study in the emergency department. They took patients that were adults who had signs and symptoms of DVT, and they did a little screening before you were allowed into the study. Everybody received a Wells test for DVT to determine their pretest probability. Then they also received a serum D-dimer. In patients that had a low risk by Wells and also a negative D-dimer, they were excluded because they were thought to be too low likelihood of having a DVT to be worth testing further. They also excluded people that had a DVT diagnosed in the past 6 months, or if they recently had an ultrasound looking for a DVT, or if they were not within the convenience hours of the study investigators. So basically, if they came at night or if they came on the weekends, they were missed because they only did this study when there were physicians there who were trained to collect it.
And it does seem like the training that those attendings underwent was fairly intensive. It was a multi-day ultrasound course that included 4 hours dedicated to DVT training and then 6 months of practice in the emergency department with sessions with their radiology team. So a little bit above and beyond what you would typically expect for, I would say, your average emergency physician.
I agree with you. I think they said everybody who was enrolling patients had at least 30 point-of-care exams for DVT before starting, and it seems like many of them may have had even more. Now, I'm going to walk you through the algorithm for the study because it's a little bit confusing. So patients came in if they had a suspected DVT. Remember, if they had a negative D-dimer and a low Wells score, they were already knocked out of the study. If they had a low Wells score and a positive D-dimer, then they got the point-of-care 3-point compression study in the ED. If they were positive, they were treated and discharged to follow up with the DVT clinic. If they were negative, they were not treated and they followed up to get their comprehensive ultrasound exam. In patients that were moderate or high risk based on their Wells score, if their D-dimer was negative, they still got their 3-point ultrasound, and if that was negative or positive, it seems they were treated and discharged. If they had a positive D-dimer and they were moderate to high risk, they also received their ED ultrasound, and again, whether that was negative or positive, it seems as though they were treated. If you look at their algorithm in the figure here, it seems that everybody that was moderate or high risk for DVT seemed to have been treated. It's a little confusing because they don't talk about that too much in the body of the paper. We do know that everybody seemed to be followed up by the DVT clinic regardless of what they found on ultrasound. So hopefully they just stopped the treatment if it was ultimately determined to be unnecessary.
Yeah, the algorithm's a little confusing. The DVT moderate and high-risk group has that classic diamond shape that you like to see with algorithms, where they all start at the same point and end at the same point. But I understand I think this was likely the design was in order to continue to provide what was considered standard of care while studying this intervention, which would be the 3-point compression point-of-care ultrasound.
So, Chris, I think we've belabored it enough. What did they find? Is this the study that will end all DVT studies and give us an answer?
I don't think we got quite that far. They ultimately scanned 109 patients, and their point-of-care ultrasound had a 93.2% sensitivity and a 90% specificity for DVT. So their overall test accuracy was 91.7%, which gave them pretty good positive and negative predictive values, both around 91.7 and 91.8% respectively.
I guess the question is it good enough? Is it good enough that we would not have to do anything afterwards? Are we going to rule it in or rule it out?
Well, if we round down a little bit, keep it around the same, what's that, about 10%? You'd say 7 to 10% of DVTs that you would miss. using this study. And this also to keep in mind, and I think we're going to talk about this with limitations, but this gold standard is one single ultrasonography evaluation, and most outpatient workup for DVT algorithms advise getting a second ultrasound in a week if you still have symptoms, because even that, their gold standard doesn't have 100% sensitivity. So to answer your question, how risk averse are you?
Yeah, that's a great point. And what I always tell our trainees here is the more you scan, the less you miss. So if you really are risk averse and you want to rule out DVT as much as you can, then you better just evaluate as much of the deep venous system as you can see. And all the studies kind of support that. Like the more that you're evaluating into the femoral vein or the deep femoral vein, the less you'll miss DVTs there, obviously. You can kind of modify it on almost a sliding scale to determine how much you're willing to risk. And keep in mind, there are some consequences for scanning more, and most people think that it takes more time and resources, and that can potentially be a bad thing. But what about in this study? Did it take them a lot of time?
So this is actually a secondary outcome that I was really interested in that they studied, looking at total amount of time it took for them to do this test. And you can tell that they, in the discussion they had when designing this study, time to do this must have been an issue, because they didn't even say, you know, probe to skin time. They went, all right, we're starting from absolute zero, the machine is off, to finish with the exam time. And it was only about 5 minutes, which seems pretty reasonable to potentially answer your clinical question.
That's great. 20 minutes max. So some people are slower than others. And 20 minutes seems a little bit less reasonable than 5 to me.
It does.
Found it pretty interesting. They broke down the patients that had false negatives and false positives, and they're trying to figure out what makes these patients difficult, or why could we not get the images accurately in these people. Did they figure out any characteristics that made it harder or easier to scan?
Yeah, so they actually reported on all of their incorrect tests. So they had 4 false negatives. All of them were in calling popliteal, or in failing to see popliteal DVTs. 3 of them were in obese patients, and the 4th patient had quote-unquote difficult anatomy, which I don't know what that means, if it was a goat or something.
I think they said that it was because his superficial veins were deep, so they thought that was actually the deep venous system.
There you go.
Because he had some large collaterals.
And then in the false positives, there were 2 lymph nodes that were identified as DVTs, 1 ruptured Baker cyst, a superficial thrombophlebitis, and 1 was called positive, and the patient, I believe, was admitted and found to have a PE, and then on a later scan was found to be negative. So there's a question of really if it was a false positive or maybe there was clot migration.
I was so disappointed to see lymph nodes still being called DVTs. This is a classic false positive that we teach on, but every time everyone laughs and they say, I'm not going to ever call a lymph node a DVT, but people still do. And it's really easy to differentiate them. You just have to scan above and below it and see if it is a vein or if it's just a discrete mass like a lymph node. Chris, what are some of the limitations of this study?
Yeah, there are a few things that come to mind when you think about the generalizability of this particular study. One of the biggest ones is the dedicated training for the emergency physicians, like we mentioned. Something else to keep in mind when thinking about the DVTs detected in this study is that this facility and institution had decided not to scan for CAF DVTs. So in their comprehensive exams and in their point of care exams, they aren't looking for CAF DVTs, which I understand is a general point of contention as to whether these require treatment or not in general. But if you're at an institution, or you in particular have this as part of your standard of care, saying that CAF DVTs are something that need to be treated, well, then this study really isn't applicable since it didn't really examine for those.
And the other thing that we already mentioned was that the radiology performed ultrasound as the gold standard isn't perfect, and you can definitely miss more proximal DVTs that are in the pelvic vessels, and you can even miss other DVTs just because it's not a perfect test.
And there was also that 48-hour delay between the point of care scan and the comprehensive scan.
A lot can happen in 48 hours.
They've had entire movies run in 48 hours.
Chris, holding your feet to the fire here, is this study or this data going to change your practice as an emergency physician?
For me, 10% is still pretty significant. So I don't think I'm going to be foregoing comprehensive testing. Having said that, it may affect whether I discharge the patient on anticoagulation or not.
That makes sense to me. I feel similarly to you. I'm not going to let it change my management, but already I was kind of using point-of-care ultrasound for DVT to help me determine whether or not I'm going to send the patient home with anticoagulation. Either way, ensuring close follow-up and a repeat comprehensive ultrasound, ideally within the next day or two.
So basically, this study is allowing me to catch up to your already cutting-edge practice.
That's very nice of you to say, but essentially, yes. So let me summarize this study. So this was a prospective convenience sample of a population in Spain in the emergency department. They enrolled people with suspected DVT, but excluded those that were low risk for actually having a DVT. They ended up with 109 patients. They found that the test characteristics for point-of-care 3-point compression ultrasound was 93.2% sensitive, 90% specific. That gives you likelihood ratios of 9.32 and negative likelihood ratio of 0.08. Our take-home points from this study is that if you train really hard, you can be pretty accurate with diagnosing lower extremity DVTs with point-of-care ultrasound, but it's probably not enough at this point that you can use it without following up with a comprehensive ultrasound. I want to thank the authors for performing this study, and I want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in yet again. Remember that you can visit our website at ultrasoundgel.org. You can check us out on Facebook or Google+, and we'll talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel.
Everybody gets a complimentary DVT when they come to the emergency department in Andalusia.